Okay, as I mentioned earlier, I just come back from teaching a meditation retreat over in Thailand for 7 days. Sometimes they call it a soft retreat because it was physically comfortable, your own rooms in a hotel, food you wanted to eat, lots of choice, and to do as much meditation as a person feel they needed. So they don't have to do too much if they're beginners, do much more if they are experienced, little by little, to be able to train their bodies and mind in the same principles, but taking it, you know, a little bit deeper every time. Learn about just relaxing the body and the mind. Simple thing, but very difficult to do. But at that retreat, there was one gentleman who asked me if I possibly could to give a talk on Buddhism and, exciting, human rights, human resources, HR. And HR and Buddhism. And I've got some cred in that area because it was some years ago, actually quite a few now, I was invited to give a speech at a HR conference in Singapore, and from there I was headhunted and invited to the biggest HR conference in Europe. And they paid all my airfares, put me up in a nice hotel, and at Docklands in the Excel Center, freshly built, with, I think, Bill Bryson was there and a few other sort of luminaries, so-called luminaries. But anyway, I didn't go to his talk because he didn't come to mine. So but I obviously made an impression there, because as soon as I got back to Australia, there was an email waiting for me from the National Health Service in Britain, the NHS. And they said, we listened to your talk, really nice talk, can you please come to our annual conference in Birmingham to give a keynote? And I had to reply to them. I said, I'm ashamed of you, National Health Service. I've just come from a long trip from England now to Australia, and you want me to come back again to Birmingham. As you, of all people, should know, such repeated journeys over many time zones, getting jet lag, is going to be very bad for my health. So you being the National Health Service, I'm surprised at you. That was my response. They never asked me again. Maybe they don't have a sense of humor. But anyhow, that first thing with so-called HR is just the very name of it, human resources. A resource is something to be mined, to be exploited, to actually be value-added downstream and exported to China or something like that. No, you can't, don't sort of look at people just like things and just look upon them as their monetary value, your earning potential. And in fact, at that conference, I was just up there ready to rock and roll, as they said, in my generation anyway. When I got up there to start my talk, about 5 or 10 minutes before, a message came up saying there was 2 people trying to get in for free, claiming to be your relations. You know, like friends of the band. So, you know, I just said, well, I don't know any of my relations coming. He said, no, it's supposed to be your brother. And then, and his daughter, my niece. I thought, you know, well, that probably is my brother trying to get in for free. It's like, sorry, brother. But anyway, I went down, and sure enough, it was him and my niece. And I mentioned last time, they know what the niece or the nephew of a monk, what they're called. They call their monk, who's their brother's, their father's brother, Monkle. They actually do that. It's a really nice name, so I appreciate that. So, have you got any nephews and nieces they call you Monkle? Yeah, exactly. So that's the appropriate term. So, and I said, yeah, I can verify their identity. That's my brother and his daughter. And then came in. And then I asked Golden, why on earth did you try and get in for free? You know, he was a banker. You know, she's got a good job and they'll pay the fees. And then they told me how much they were charging. Just for my talk, only 1 hour of talk, I think it was like £100 each. Ah, that's my market rate. But it was only just now. That is not, it's amazing just how much sometimes people actually ask, how much you charge. You know, even recently, you know, just with a funeral, how much do you charge? You know, to do a funeral service. And I said, an arm and a leg and a head and a body. I need a dead body to do a funeral service. But nothing at all, whatever you want to give, or work by donations. And what do you do, you know, for any of your talks which you give? You know, sometimes it's when you look at a person as an earning potential, a value to them, oh, that's just really gross, in my opinion. But then the opposite, if you say, like this person, I think I said this a couple of weeks ago, when they came in and they called and they said, hey, you teach meditation, Ajahn Brahm? Yes. How much do you charge? Say, nothing. Say, nothing. You don't charge anything to teach meditation. No, it's all for donation free, whatever you want to do. Say, well, if you don't charge, you can't be any good then. And hang up. As if, you know, the more you charge, the more valuable you are, and the better you are, which is, to me, that's, now in life, you don't look at people that way. But if you say it's all for free, of course, then what do people say? You're worthless. So these days, if ever get that, and said, I want to invite you to a conference, you know, what's your fee? And you always answer, priceless. Which is a nice word, priceless, without a money value, but not worthless. Very valuable. And that is what human beings should be looked at. Now, what's your starting salary? Priceless. How many salary increases do we get a year? Never enough. But looking at a person, instead of by the monetary value, looking at the people themselves, the value. And that's something which even the idea of human resources, even the word, doesn't really capture, you know, what this is truly all about. You may have HR, call it human respect, human re-evaluation, human responsibility, because it has to go both ways, and human rights, and also just human value instead of just resources. Because, again, in any organization, we have HR managers, but fortunately they don't actually really explain what the R means. I like to mess around and change labels like that. Just like I often tell kids who are taking exams. They're trying to get an A in their exams. Until I tell them, did you ever ask your teacher or the education system what an A means? And a B and a C and a D and an E and an F. And they said, well, actually, doesn't F means fail? It doesn't mean fail. F means free. You don't have to go to school anymore because they kick you out. And A means, again, you've got to go there next year and just compete again. So that's, you know that, you've been there, you just keep on. But anyway, A also means arrogant, and F means fantastic. So if you get an F at school, fantastic. But anyway, what is HR? Human relax. But then people say, well, if you relax, you don't get productive. Really? Because sometimes the whole idea of like your HR department in any organization is to have that, you know, what we always want to have, a win-win for people who go to work. They feel safe, secure, valued, respected, boundaries kept. At the same time, the people who's actually employing you, they can make the profit, they can make sort of the service so that they can pay your salaries. And just so those salaries, you know, when you do pay tax, you know, those taxes, you know, do pay for the roads and the schools and the hospitals, and they do need those things. So it's almost as somebody once suggested to me, every time, you know, you see sort of a hospital, that's your dana, your donations, made by the tax office. Some of it goes there. Or when you see just the roads, or do the black spots, or the public transport, or you know, other facilities which we have in this country, the good ones, that's for helping people. Because you know we can get such a critical mind sometimes. And I was asking people, this was over in Singapore, but only a few people actually ever listened to one of the most amazing religious documentaries which was ever made, which was called The Life of Brian. People of my generation, you should go listen to that again, because it has some amazing points to it. And one of those points, they were having, I forget what they called it, they had a rebellious group called the Society for the Liberation of Palestine or whatever, for what it was. And they started their meeting, if you remember this, by asking the question, what, because you know, this was a time when that part of the country was ruled by the Romans. What have the Romans ever done for us? What have they ever done for us? That, you know, this actor was saying, it was John Cleese. What has the Romans ever done for us? And somebody put their hand up, well, actually, no, law and order. You know, before the Romans came here, you know, you couldn't go, you know, down the back streets at night without being accosted and robbed and beaten up. Law and order. Oh, yeah, okay, we grant you that. What has the Romans ever done for us other than law and order? Oh, you know, just sewage. Oh, you know, it smelt all over the place in this city before the Romans came. Great sewage. Yeah, what else have they done? Oh, yeah, aqueducts and running water. Well, what else have they done? Oh, well, they've done roads, you know, so you can actually drive your cart, your ox cart down the road, and you don't get sort of breaking all of the wheels. Yeah, what have they done for us? Education. You can learn Latin. Whatever good that is anyway. But anyway, yeah, but what have the Romans ever done for us other than law and order and education and hospitals and roads and safety and water and health and sewage? Nothing, nothing. Out with the Romans, yeah, out with the Romans. There's a wonderful example, if you haven't seen that, I'm trying to act it out to give you some energy about this. If you haven't actually seen it yourself, it was just a wonderful little satire about sometimes focusing on the faults of an organization or the people who work in that organization rather than actually seeing the contributions. For those of you who have worked in organizations at any level, how often is it that people praise you when you go there and try and make somebody happy today? And I got this once again. So I move around in some interesting circles, you know, the highest and the lowest, and mostly in between. And the CEO of Changi Airport Corporation or Management or whatever it's called, Jason Goh. And he said a lot of people complain when they go to work. Just, you know, it's really mean, or they've got a nasty boss, or they don't look forward to going to work in the morning, too much stress. But he said, how many people go to work in the morning resolving to make someone happy today? and I make that top of your list when you go to work. I'm going to be kind to someone today. So that you create the atmosphere in your workplace, in your office, in your monastery, in your Buddhist society. You go in there, this is my first thing I will do. I will have to make somebody happy today. Be kind to them. But then you say, well, that's going to sort of waste so much time. You should be working. No, it is a win-win situation. As many, many people know, if you get a better esprit de corps, you know, the motivation, the fact of working together, of actually appreciating one another, listening to one another, and not be just so about me, but always about the us. That's one of the reasons why when you go overseas, I still don't know why this happens, that people want to take photographs of this fat old monk. I mean, when I was young, you know, okay, fair enough, thin and healthy and handsome and strong, but not now, fat and old, and, you know, but, I said, what do you want to do that? But they say, well, we want to take a selfie. That's so off, totally banned. You're not allowed to take selfies in a Buddhist community. The reason is, because no self. You know, we don't accept the existence of a self. And so, they ever ask me for a selfie, it always has to be a weepy. In other words, it's about us, we take it together. It's not just for you, it's always for us. I love changing those words around to make them a bit more interesting and a bit more not about me, but always about the us. And that is one of the reasons why. Stop blaming others. You go and do something to change it. The old rather light a candle than complain about darkness. But our problem is that, oh, well, you know, just, you know, you do something about it. You're Ajahn Brahm, you're the manager, you're the president, the buck stops there. Yeah, but who sent the buck? And why wasn't it acted upon before it got, you know, to where it ended up? So one of the things, one of the rules in Bodhinyana Monastery, which is very helpful in any HR department, is if you complain about something, if you've got a great idea how to improve things, you do it. So we always have this in, you know, in my ideas over in Bodhinyana Monastery. If someone says, or they complains, oh yeah, you've got a point there. You know, that sometimes, oh, we should plant more natives. Oh, good idea. Off you go and plant. No, I didn't mean about me doing it. I mean, I said, well, you should. we should have more talks on meditation. Good idea. Off you go and talk about meditation. No. The point is here that sometimes it's actually to do things. We have to do them together. Instead of getting someone else to fix up the problems, which really does mean in any win-win situation, it always has to be about us. And when you actually give a job to somebody else, give them a chance, then actually they learn so much. I do look at the ABC News site to keep in touch with what's going on, and I saw there was a program or something about this. There was kids, teenagers, you know, they're always asking their mum for money and can we have this. And so apparently they decided to have this program, a test, of actually they gave the finances to the teenagers for a week. Here's the money for the week, you spend it. And so these teenagers, they had the weekly allowance, you know, for the family. And then what happened is they spent it all in a couple of days on stupid things, like a coffee machine. And they had no money to buy dinner for the rest of the week. So what it was actually, instead of complaining, okay, you have a go, you try and do it. You see what it's like. So I know this, that because I go on the aircraft a lot, they had the manager of Air New Zealand. And this fellow, incognito, he actually goes and works in the checking counters. And he's the general manager. Just to find out for himself what it's like, you know, to actually to work in there. When people complain about, you know, it's not the right seats. Or it's not that sometimes he works as a flight attendant. And this is like the CEO, the manager. He works as a baggage handler. And so all parts of the industry, you know, he finds out by just actually being there, learning. And when he does that, it means that you get far more understanding of all parts of the industry or the place where you work. Imagine where you work, wherever that is. Imagine that if you changed places for a day, that you worked on the reception, and a receptionist, you know, worked in the CEO's office. So you get an understanding, a taste of that it is all about us, and we do need, you know, to understand what the other person is thinking about. And then it means you never exploit one another. Because the point of actually calling a person a resource is something which you mine, explore, until you get to the peak deliverance, the peak oil, or the peak this, and then there's nothing left afterwards. Have you ever felt like that? You know, that sort of people squeeze as much out of you as they possibly can, and then once they have, then they leave. I often feel like that on a Friday night. Squeeze as much out of me. Did you see that one coming? Oh, Ajahn Brahm, I've got this important question. Oh, it's Ajahn Brahm, can you sign my book? Oh, Venerable Mudu, can you sort of please come to the next blessing of the dragon boats? Oh, can you... He's our chief dragon boat blesser, apparently, when they have dragon boat competitions. But, have you ever seen that sometimes we look at other people as just a resource to squeeze everything out of? So instead of looking at people like a human resource, a mineral resource, a water resource, or even that fresh air resource, and that's one thing I always appreciate whenever you come out of the Perth airport. If you ever go overseas, just how clean and fresh the air is in this state. It always really hits me, just, wow, it's just so fresh and clean. You can feel this. A very fortunate place to live in Perth, so don't destroy it. So instead of calling it a resource, you call it like a precious asset, a valuable thing. People are valuable. Not to be exploited, but to be respected. And if you give value to people, really respect them, it's amazing what they give you back. It has to be win-win. This is not idealism. This is actually just one of the things which I did learn in that HR conference. Because one of the reasons, of course, you know, a Buddhist monk gets invited to these places, because they said, well, you know, if we wanted to hear from the HR experts, you know, we read that in books. We get it online. We want to see something different, a different perspective. So seeing it from a different angle, a different perspective, we get more understanding of it. No one's got the full picture. No one will ever have the full picture. But we always come from things at different angles, and it makes the picture much more understandable and much more powerful. So that's the whole idea of working in different places in the organization, so you can actually understand what's going on. Receive things from other angles as well. And so, looking at people as like not just a human resource, but something which is really valuable, and respecting them, it means that actually people do tend to work much harder for you, to be more productive, because they feel they're valued. If you've been in any relationship where you're not valued, you're demeaned, diminished, not respected, not heard, not listened to. That could be in a family, in your relationship. It could be in your place of work. What happens? You really just, your energy gets sucked out of you. You just don't want to do anything anymore. You're squeezed. Your boundaries are not respected. Just your energy levels are not sort of heard. And sometimes that sensitivity towards one another is just so important. to get people to have the energy to serve and give even more. You don't, you just get so depressed, you get lack of motivation, you're just dispirited. What's the point? I give, you work hard, and what I get afterwards, please give some more. It's not enough. So, what I'm teaching a long time, at work, in your relationship with your parents, with your children, please lower your expectations. Don't raise them, because if you raise the expectations, it's like raising your sales targets, raising your productivity. You better sell more next year. I was a bit concerned about a year ago when the results of the Australian census came out. I'm a Buddhist leader here. And the number of Buddhists in Australia, number of people who put in their names, did it go up, did it go down? My productivity bonus depended upon it. There I was teaching all this time all over Australia, trying to lead and bust my ass to sort of help people and this. I couldn't really say I'm busting my ass, so because I'm still pretty thick. Wear my hands to the bone, and I can't see any bone yet. My nose to the grindstone, and that's pretty still big. So, you know what the result was? The percentage went down. Were they going to lessen the supply of tea and condensed milk for me? Was my rations going to go down until I improved? But then somebody found out that, yeah, the percentage went down, but actually the number went up. And so with a bit of creative accounting, I kept my job. But have you ever felt like that at work? You really work your butt off, and then you really work hard, and they expect more. It's not as if they think, okay, well done. Now take a holiday, take a relax. Always more. There's something really wrong with that. But they say, well, no, we're trying to sort of encourage you to be more productive, to increase your skills. But there's only a certain amount you can increase. So instead, when you lower your expectations as a policy in your organization, you find that more people will volunteer, more people will do a bit extra. Because when the expectations are low, the extra is so special, they appreciate that you've done a little bit more. So, your family. How many of you tell your kids you've got to do more? Come on, you know your grades were A minus, but you can do A plus, you can do A double plus, A infinity plus. You can always do more. And that really stresses people out, which means they get burnt out and they give up. But imagine if it was the lowered your expectations and then you started to do more because you didn't have to, because you wanted to, as a service. One thing with volunteers, which I've seen so often, volunteers work much harder than they do if they're being paid. Not everybody, because there's a few people here being paid by the Buddhist Society. No, you're the exceptions which which fit the rule. Because you just do it for just, you can earn much more probably in other places. But you do it here because there's something you appreciate it. You're loved and you're sort of praised. Now that's really important that sometimes if ever I go in the offices, where the admin works or where the treasury office, you always try and just make a few jokes and something like that. Just like our treasurer today, I was working out just how much of this and how much of that, and I did it in my head before he could actually come out with a figure. And he said, I was never very good at maths. And I said, but you're our treasurer.
was only just making a joke at it, and he just laughed. So he knows he's not going to get the sack. But when you give a look, no, people actually work much harder than volunteer because they're not expected to get paid. And even the ones who do get paid, they don't expect to get probably what they're really worth. Just like me, my market value is much more than a cup of tea. But it does mean they get uplifted, encouraged. And that's really important in any business. The praise, the recognition, the very fact that you are valued. You're not looked as a resource, but your contribution above and over just what really, you know, is expected of you, because the expectations are low. You are praised. That really makes you uplifted. It's one of the reasons why volunteer work is one of the great antidotes or therapies for depression. I mentioned that years ago, but I was reminded of it. What do you do for depression? Go and get counselling, go and get some medication, go and just, well, I don't know what you do. But how many people look at volunteer work as a powerful antidote to depression? It works. Because the reason why is you come into a place, no one really expects too much out of you, but you do a little bit extra, and you get all this praise. Wow. Wonderful. Some of the old anecdotes, I try and put this down in real life. There was one time when I got a vacation job, really poor student, as Parks and Gardens, and had to edge like a pathway, you know, so in a park in was it Halston or in Shire of Ealing anyway, the Council of Ealing. And anyway, I just was really trying my best to make it this beautiful, nice line, so where the grass was overgrowing the path, to make it look really nice, like a landscaping. And then this old lady came up to me, and she was going for a walk in the path, or, you know, maybe in her sort of 70s or 80s. And she came up and said, "You're doing a wonderful job, young man. Here's sixpence." You know, which wasn't worth that much in monetary value, but the smile which he gave me, and wonderful job, young man, that was worth, you know, all the pay for the week for me. Just, you know, the praise and the uplift, this little old lady appreciating the path she was walking on was looking more attractive, more beautiful. And of course, afterwards, what did I do? Try to make it even more pretty and more beautiful. I always found that when you get praised and encouraged, you do work harder. Or maybe not harder, but happily more motivated. And you want to do a really good job. How many of your bosses at work will give you sixpence? Or 50? What do they have? What's the lowest? It shows I don't use money. I don't handle money because, you know, this is our monk's rules. What's the lowest coin these days in Australia? 5 cents. It's still got 5 cents. Okay. I thought that was the pop star or something. 5 cents. No, it's 50 cents. 50 cents. Anyway, it's gone down in value. Depreciating. So anyway, if your boss gave you 5 cents, saying, "Wonderful job you did. Here's 5 cents. How would you feel? But if it was a little old lady with a beautiful toothless smile, "Here's wonderful young man. Thank you so much. Here's 5 cents. It would make your day because unexpected. So that was unexpected when you do something a little bit extra and just a little bit of volunteer work. You actually feel really good about it. And of course, we're talking about just the other night about volunteering work and that time when I thought I was just doing this to keep up with my friends. Because, you know, when I went to university, there was not that many people who were Buddhists over there. And mostly my friends were Christians. And a couple of my friends who were Christians said, "We're going off to do some volunteer work."
because that's what Christians are supposed to do and stuff. And like, oh, well, I'm a Buddhist, and Buddhism is as good as Christianity. I'm going to go too. And it was totally out of pride I went to do some volunteer work, just keeping up with the Joneses. That's all it was. Just, you know, not losing face with my friends. You know, they knew I was a Buddhist. You know, we're as good as you are, na, 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 you can't. So I went along anyway, just thinking I'd better do this for a couple of weeks just to, you know, to do the right thing. And I ended up going there for 2 years. I enjoyed it. Those Christian friends, after 2 or 3 weeks, they left. Na, 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 na. No, I'm not going to go there. But I really, really enjoyed it. It was like volunteering in the OT department of Down syndrome people who had been institutionalized in those days. I don't believe in institutionalizing people, but you know, that was what they used to do in those days. But anyway, we went there to do some OT work, just, I don't know, but exactly what we did, painting and stuff. But I really looked forward to that. So much so, I was telling the monks the other night when I came back from Thailand that there was one occasion, you know, I just shows how dumb I was, that I, it's in the afternoon, and they gave me the whole group of them, they split the groups into two, and by myself in the morning, in the afternoon. You know, they trusted me so much, didn't need any supervision. They looked at me for a couple of years, and off I was doing stuff, and then had a tea break. And this is UK. Everyone has a tea break in the afternoon, no matter where you are. And then afterwards, looked at the other group. And after it was all finished, just before the afternoon finished, they said, would you please come into the main room? Because I hadn't guessed that they had been making me. These are the Down syndrome people and my friends. Little cards, little presents. And they said, you've been the longest serving volunteer we've ever had. We know you're going to be a final examination start now, so you know you have to leave. We just want to say thank you. And those were little gifts, you know, which you can't sort of buy them in shops. No one would stock them. They're not particularly skillful or artistic, but the heart which went into them just made me cry. And after crying, they shocked me. I didn't expect it at all. Then I had to say, if you don't mind, he said, well, yeah, what is it? Do you want to make a speech? And can I come back next week? Because my exams don't start for another week. And they let me come for another week. And even though it's only just a couple of days before the exams, you know, because I just enjoyed it so much. And to this day, I think I've written about this, any emotional intelligence which I have got, I learnt most of that from those 2 years of serving, joy and happiness, I look back upon that, giving, learning, huge amount. And honestly, when I look forward to going there, rather learn, it was learning, not giving, learning from those friends who were emotionally just geniuses, where they were short, you know, in other capabilities, than actually to hang out with all these professors and Nobel laureates. This Cambridge University had loads of those. But people really understood you. And I often tell that story, I'm going on these stories again, that broke up with a girlfriend, you know, just a young man, sometimes end of the world, really, really negative, and what did I do wrong? And then you go over to this volunteer work. And I still remember to this day, one of these guys running towards me, and just, without even saying anything, just putting his arms around me and giving me this enormous hug. How on earth did you know? You just, body language, saw it straight away. But, you know, I was upset, something was bothering me. Didn't need to tell him anything. He knew. And of course his friend, he gave me this huge hug. Ooh, that really sort of shook me. How on earth did you know that? You just saw it. So that type of, when you volunteer for stuff, you actually really learn so much.
and it uplifts you. You're actually doing it, learning something, become more sensitive, because it's not for money. It's for something more than that. People are more important than things. And if you give the importance to people, your workers, your community, your Buddhist society, often, you know, there's just a new committee over in the Singapore Buddhist Fellowship, so just on the way back came out of the airport for an hour just to give them a pep talk. Not really a pep talk, but a love talk, if you like. You are the Buddhist Fellowship of Singapore. You're Buddhist first. Fellowship is important. But for goodness sake, you're not an organization to make money or just to get as many followers or convert people. That's, you know, you're Buddhist. Buddhist Society of WA. Even before we're society, we're Buddhist. Please keep things in order of priority. You know, having done sort of academic research and stuff, and I always remember the word church. A church? What famous churches? Have you ever visited any churches here in Australia? St. George's Cathedral, just St. Patrick's Cathedral, whatever. That was never the meaning of a church. A church was the people who actually assembled together. The people came first and the building came after them. The people were called the church, and then the building became more important, and the people weren't valued, the buildings were. And I also remembered one of the last words my teacher Ajahn Chah used to say just before he had a stroke and no teaching anymore. He said to me that he has built many monasteries but not many monks, let alone nuns. And he said that with sadness. It's not the buildings. It's not the profits. It's not how gleamy your skyscraper is. What is really important is the people who work there. It's not just the facilities in a hospital. It's the doctors who work there. The people. The nurses. It's not just how big your Buddhist society is. And how big your stupa is, or how many gleaming chandeliers, or how much gold and jewels have you got on the top of the reliquary of the Buddha. Is that important? Isn't it something missing something somewhere? It's the people are more important. So these buildings over here, they're for you. Even when we first started constructing Bodhi Garden Monastery, I remember this a lot of times. People would come to visit and say, where's the monastery? Is this? Where's the monastery? He said, this is the monastery. No, there's trees here and kangaroos and there's grass and there's huge grass, but where is the monastery? So what do you think a monastery is? Well, you know, the cloisters, the buildings, the hall. I said, you haven't got it, have you? That's not a monastery. That's just the thing which houses a monastery. The community. People are more important than things. And when you remember that, you find that monasteries or the Buddha Society thrive. Our business model is people, is monks, is nuns, not the buildings. They come next. If only the council could understand that. And the tax office could understand that. And the government could understand that. There's people. Not how much money you get. Not the gross national product. There's a reason why they call it gross national product. Money. Because it's gross, isn't it? Trade deficit. Trade surplus. What are you trading? People's lives? Families? Happiness? What are you trading? So, instead of the gross national product, we call it the SNP.
It's not the Scottish Nationalist Party, because I know that that used to be there. SNP is a subtle national product. How much sense of community, happiness, peace do we get? Then you find you're very productive. Just finishing off, some years ago, I'm one of these global conferences, which I'm one of the two conveners with, Andy Monkford over in Singapore. We started this global conference. The last one was over in Toronto, before it was here. We had it over here. Some weird people came with that. Anyway, I won't go there. The cyborg, remember the cyborg? He had the, because he was colorblind, he had a little camera which converted what he saw, especially in the color spectrum, into vibrations, and he learned how to interpret that with his brain. So he could actually see, and he saw more colors than a human eye can. Like a cyborg. Great fellow. Very interesting. Because he actually saw color as sound, that he was a bit strange, but very wonderful. Remember that when he saw Prince Charles? And, he saw Prince Charles and said, "You sound very good." "No, you sound very beautiful." So what do you mean? Because that's actually how he saw things in sound. But anyway, at the conference, that's right, over, before we had one in Auckland, in New Zealand, and it was there that one of the old friends, a guy called Colin Ash, he was there, and he was supposed to be giving a paper on Buddhist economics. But the last moment, and it's great they do this, they change the subject at the last minute. In other words, they listen and they respond to the people there. And that's when I remember him. This was an early one, I think, in Singapore. Just did it off the spot. He decided to talk about the economic value of kindness and morality, of keeping precepts even, the benefit to the economy of kindness and honesty. Really weird, because he was a lecturer at Reading University and also an advisor to the Bank of England. So, he had cred, because he was in that field, economist, Reading University, he's also a Buddhist. And he was saying that he did crunch the numbers very quickly. There's something in your business called transaction costs. And also staff, staff retention or losing staff, key staff. And he said that transaction costs means when someone promises to do something, to deliver a product, in time, to actually to give the development approval quickly instead of waiting 5 blooming years. That's where, Prem knows what I'm talking about there. For the Ajahn Paul, Ajahn Brahmani's Kutis. And they promise they will do something, and because people you doubt their promises, you don't know when that thing is going to arrive. So that, what happens, things are late. This is such a good story. That I remember just because I was building in those early years, we were organizing some concrete to lay something or other, and it was late, so I called up the yard, got through to someone on the phone and said, we ordered some concrete, for the building. And they said, the truck has just left the yard. Okay. And I put the phone down. Another 15 minutes, still no sign. I rang up again. And I got another gentleman on the phone. And they said, the truck has just left the yard. Hey, hang on. This other guy said that 15 minutes ago. Because they were lying to me. But at least, when I laughed, from that day on, the truck always actually left the yard at the right time and arrived at the right time, thank goodness. But that really messed us up. So have you ever noticed that sometimes you can't rely on the honesty of people in business? That costs the economy, and it costs a lot of stress to the people who work. I've experienced that. So that's one transaction. And also, what happens if you order something and it's not exactly what they said it's going to be. It doesn't do the job they promised. What happens then? You know, I have to spend more time fixing it. He calls that lack of honesty, the lack of trust, is what they call trans, and that takes the economy way down. So it is not Chinese imports, it's that people keep screwing each other in the United States. That is Mr. Trump's problem. So in other words, people are just always just dishonest. So he said, if you have virtue and trust and kindness, you actually find that doing business is much easier. Your jobs are much more rewarding. That you don't sort of doubt other people's motives. The virtue, the kindness, the teamwork, the right speech, the right listening improves. And he said that, and this is coming from an advisor to the Bank of England, a leading economist, that makes everything more profitable, more productive, and less stressful. Because people are valued, they're not doubted, they're more honest, kind. That's what I mean by win-win situation. So, HR, human, responsibility, human just respect, that is something where you can have a much more powerful experience where people are valued and they live up to your value. Volunteer, you do more work, you do volunteer more because you're respected for it. I mean, really respected, you're cared. Wonderful, you've done an extra day, take a day off. Has your boss ever said that? Work very hard. Okay, take a day off. Wouldn't it be a wonderful place if that happened? Buddhist HR. How many people are bosses here? Put your hand up if you're a boss. So you change things. Do it. You're not losing out. You're creating a better world. Wonderful thing to do. So thank you for listening. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, so we got some questions from overseas first of all, because I think a couple of weeks ago, you know, I didn't answer them first, and by the time I finished, they'd gone offline. So here we go. Three questions here and from overseas. From Sweden. Hi, Ajahn Brahm. Hi, Andre. How can we get a better world when capitalism always looks at people as production resources enabling profit? If capitalism looks at people as production resources, you don't enable profit, you lose profitability. You may make a quick buck, but then you go down afterwards. It's unsustainable. That's actually one thing I never went forward on that. The HR manager from the Department of Fisheries and whatever it was over an infrastructure or something in the UK government, that was where Mr. Miliband, he just was cutting his teeth as a minister and became very well known, became the leader of the opposition or something, leader of the Labour Party. And this was the lady who taught him how to run a ministry, big ministry. And she said that all the time, she gave the example that if the people in the department got something through the EU Parliament at the time, when they're really part of the EU, if they got the contract signed with the EU, they'd get promoted. But, she said, it was a UK African, great lady, and she was saying that she changed the culture. Instead of rewarding the results, because when they got the results, they just burned themselves out, they just really sort of pushed everybody to beyond the limit, and they could only do that once, and then everyone resigned. Or they'd moved on because just the workplace experience was terrible. So instead of that, they rewarded process. People who actually worked together, they learned, they were a team. united, common purpose, helped each other. He said, they may not get the contract signed this time, but they'll get about the next 5 contracts signed. That's the profitability, looking long term, not the short term. So the long term, you know what happens, you know, when people look at profit at the expense of people. They have royal commissions, people lose trust, people get busted, they go to jail. And they destroy the environment as well at the same time. Create sort of so much problems for health and mental health too. So capitalism, whatever that means, it is our world can get far greater production, far greater happiness, wise production, but without sort of people being so stressed out and unhappy. So there is a win-win situation. What do you do when you are treated as a resource while doing service, volunteering, and lose all desire to keep volunteering? Is that sometimes you take a break, obviously, and if you are volunteering, there are many places where I hope that you are treated with the kindness and compassion, but sometimes also be a responsible volunteer. And if you're volunteering to man the respirator at the hospital today, and you can't come because you know that you are sick, at least let somebody know you can't arrive or whatever, because sometimes your work does. Or lack of work or not able to work as a volunteer does impact on others. So we're trying just to make it that sometimes volunteers or service sometimes are unable to come that day. You have to accept that. But also don't expect so much from volunteers, and don't expect so much from even our Buddhist society in West Australia. Sometimes the toilets may not be that clean. So what do? You clean them. You get out the brush and the toilet and wipe the floor. So if it's something to be done, you do it. I've done that plenty of times. Don't wait for someone else to do the job. You do it. But I'm not supposed to do that. I'm the president. I'm the monk. No. If something needs to be done as a service, what we do and do it. So then the volunteers love doing it. Especially, when the bosses come out and get their hands dirty. So that's why that Air New Zealand was working pretty well. Because the boss went and served the meals to the people. Not in first class, but just in the economy class, so you could actually see what they thought of the meals on Air New Zealand. I really admire that fellow. So anyway, volunteering, doing a bit extra just because it is more profitable for everybody. Not just with the GNP, but the SNP. How to be kind and still be assertive to co-workers when your manager is on public service? Well, there's a culture of not caring for public resources. How can we discipline without punishment? The discipline through punishment, I never think punishment works, obviously, quite frankly. We're just scared of getting caught. And what was this joke that somebody said the other day? That there was these, they sent me from overseas. There was 2 people in a truck, in a lorry, down the road, and they saw a sign, low bridge, a police sign, low bridge, 3.9 meters. And one of the guys said, our truck is 4.2 meters high. Don't make it a police sign, there's no police around this time of night. In other words, they would think these signs are there just to stop you getting fined. They don't realize that if 4.2 meter truck and 3.8 meter police aren't there or not, you're going to sort of crash into the bridge. So how many people have these devices in their car which alert you where the speed cameras are? The speed cameras are not there just to fine you, it's to keep everybody safe. So, So you don't think the speed cameras, there's no speed cameras around today, this time of night. There's one of our monks, and he's left now, some time ago. He used to work for one of the councils, as a parking inspector. So he told us, oh, well, I know it's still, you know, it says that you're not supposed to park in these places and, until 6 o'clock, but so no parking inspector works beyond 5:15, so we can park there. It's nice to know, but that's not the point, is it? The point is, you know, you're sort of, impeding the flow of the traffic. So, certainly to co-workers, when your manager is on public service, your co-workers, again, to be able to inspire, get the meaning of why we should work together. Not to discipline and fear of being punished or sacked, but of just, you know, the idea that we have to cooperate. Otherwise, we all go down. It's not the case of you have to cooperate, sort of rowing the boat. If you don't, not caring, just in it for yourself, then we all sink. It's never about me anymore. It always has to be about us. We need to get back from the selfie to the wifi. From the iPhone to the us phone. We're in it together. From the iPad to the notepad. So any questions from here, from the floor? Yes. Yeah. Yeah, the animals as well, yeah. They count.
When you say us, do you mean just humans or do you mean
nope.
All beings?
No, all beings. Birds, animals, plants, everything. That connection there.
So would that be
plants as well,
attaining to a veganism, to not paying to people to...
as best we possibly can.
Wonderful.
But there's many, many things we can always improve upon. Live exports is one of those. Thank goodness that seems to be off the agenda. So, many things here. Okay. So,
hello.
Not to exploit anything, anybody. Yeah.
Hi. Hello. I just would appreciate some comments about suffering. The hard work it is to calm the mind when you have be faced with a very challenging situation. So you have to deal with the facts of that situation, but then your mind ruminates and adds more suffering to that situation.
Yeah.
And I find the more tired you are or, you know, anxious about it, it's harder, much harder work to get that peace of mind and lessen the suffering.
Indeed.
Mm.
So there's a story, it's a bit too late to tell it in full, about when I thought I was being exploited by labouring. It was 6 days pushing barrows of earth in the jungle, and then I was just really upset after a while because it didn't seem to be logical, reasonable, until, you know, that one Thai monk came up to me and said, Brahm, pushing a wheelbarrow is easy, thinking about it is the hard part. And a lot of times when we get negative, we just rely on thinking. And we get sort of very, very upset. It's called double suffering. We're suffering, and we're suffering about suffering. It generates all this proliferation of our mind. It just makes it worse. And it's also, if you stop thinking about it, but just stop. Pushing a wheelbarrow wasn't that hard. And instead of thinking of being exploited, just I said, okay, this, I can see the purpose behind just moving this earth. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it more of it. And I always find that when I do things which aren't expected of me, I get much more happiness, much more joy. You're not expected to work so hard or to help with the concrete work in the monastery. Ajahn Brahm, you're too old to go on top of a roof. I'm going to go and I'm going to clean the gutter. Bah, 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 bah. No. You like to help, serve. Why not? So what was I doing the other day? Even just a simple thing. Just over in the Singapore Airlines, they spilt some food on the table, so I just wiped it up. I said, no, 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 you shouldn't do that. I said, no, it's my pleasure to do that. To serve, not just to get. It's always much greater fun. You know, you've got something and you've got a cup of tea and another person has it. Oh, you take it. I get much more caffeine out of that than if I drank it myself. So, see if you can change the attitude. So, oh, thank you for giving me the opportunity to make more good karma. And that really just messes your boss's mind up. Doesn't expect that. Anyway, I think that's enough for now. So we now pay respects to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, because already many people have left already. So to make it more sort of respectable, we could all bow and then we can leave.
Arahant Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivadeng Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namastang Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sangam Namami.